Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, and then my song's gon' break through like a running.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. Today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Mark Daly and Mark Hamilton here on a very dreary Thursday afternoon here in Vancouver, Canada. Hammy, I swear the weather matches your mood, but
oh my gosh,
you seem to have at least sort of like, you know, cheered up a little bit now that we were doing something a little bit more distracting than, you know.
So what certainly does cheer me up a little bit, and I'm going to get so much slander for being so, what's the opposite of which is subjective and which is objective? Which is the one as a reporter you're supposed to be? If you're a reporter, you're supposed to be blank.
I think it's objective, isn't it? You're supposed to be okay. Just kind of like subjective, I think, is where you're a little bit more biased or whatever it is, right?
So I'm going to be a little biased okay. Here, but I think I'm starting to relish in what is rapidly becoming the deconstruction of the Red Bull Formula One team. And Mark, I'm going to do some classic podcasting here. I am reading now from Wikipedia, and I want everyone to listen very closely. Adrian Martin Newey is a British Formula One engineer. He was the chief technical officer of the Red Bull F1 team. I'm going to repeat that part again. He was the chief technical officer of the Red Bull Racing F1 team. Mr. Daly, if Wikipedia has been updated, this is real. The sensational, absolute sensational godfather of downforce and technical engineering, Mr. Adrian Newey, maybe the backbone, the brains behind all of the success that the Red Bull team's had since 2006, has officially exited the Milton Keynes Formula One team. He's gone. It's over.
It's crazy, right? I mean, I was thinking about it because these rumors have been out there, what, about 4, 5, 6 days or something since the end of last week. And I was thinking, you know, to myself, is like, well, when did Ferrari have like that sort of like that big, well, they had like a, you know, the huge names all across the team. You had Schumacher driving the car. You had Ross Brawn designing the car. You had Jean Todt running the team. And, you know, this is 20 plus years ago. And all of a sudden you have Ferrari that has Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton. They have Fred Vasseur. Now they're getting Adrian Newey. Do they have all the pieces now? Like, you know, and then is it addition by subtraction with Carlos Sainz going out? But I mean, be that as it may, I mean, Adrian Newey going to Ferrari is huge news. And
if is that what you're hearing? So all I know at this point is that the exit is imminent. I don't know, unless there's, and again, this is all evolving as we're speaking,
yes, it
which is.
Is
what's making this so crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at an article right now here on
breaking news. Talk about breaking news.
Well,
it is
because it's 4:30, well, 4:45 here Pacific time. There is an article timestamped at 027 hours, so barely 20 minutes ago on skysports.com in the UK. And the title of this article is Adrian Newey, F1's serial title-winning designer, decides to leave Red Bull after nearly two decades. So, you know, okay, so it's one thing.
So we know his exit is imminent, but do we think this is tied into a pre-existing agreement with another team?
Well, that's a good question, right? Because, okay, as much as we know that things become official when the Wikipedia page gets updated, first of all, so this story was first reported a week ago in Outer Auto Motor Unsport in Germany. And so
AMS. All of us that don't speak exactly. German, AMS.
So that was picked up by them, or they first started reporting on it. Now Sky Sports is reporting on it. And let's see, the quote here is from Sky Sports reporter Craig Slater, who says, quote, "It is a fluid situation, but there is definitely substance," emphasis added, "to the notion that Adrian Newey has decided he wants to leave Red Bull and he has turned his thoughts, in effect, away from the team. That's what several senior figures close to Newey have been telling me. He has communicated informally with some senior Red Bull figures that he would like to leave the team." So Red Bull has said that Newey is contracted at least until the end of 2025 and is unaware of him joining any other team. So apparently Sky Sports, they believe that contract runs until the end of May 2025. So some
May. Yeah. So that's an important note. So May 2025.
Yeah, so about 13 months from now, because we're, 25th of April. So he has been at Red Bull for since 2006, almost 20 years. So amazing. So, I mean, he's won 4 championships with Sebastian Vettel and 3 more with Max. I mean, this dominance that we've seen over the past 2.5 years.
Don't forget, he won a chip with Williams in 96. Yes. He then went to McLaren, won 2 chips behind Mika Hakkinen. Yep. He then kind of made that transit. And again, in 2006, man, that jump from an established Formula One team to whatever was left over of Jaguar was a pretty shocking move at the time for somebody that had as much success as he had. And I think the reason why this story is so interesting, Mark, is it ties back to so many of the things that you and I have been talking about the past couple of months, which is everything to do with Christian Horner in the investigation, everything to do with the speculation about Max Verstappen looking to exit the team, the bitter civil war between the two ownership groups that stake claim to this team, that everything just seems to be rapidly deteriorating. That why would Adrian Newey, and this is where the speculation gets interesting, why would he opt to exit the team midstream in what should be their third consecutive championship season, fourth consecutive championship season, if not for the fact that something was very, very rotten in Milton Keynes?
And that's it. You know, there's obviously, something there that it goes against his principles or values. Like, I'm talking like on a personal level, that he just finds the situation untenable. So the let's see the quote here from Craig Slater he says, quote, "I think perhaps this Newey news is more to do with the power struggle that has been in the background to the Horner situation. It's been destabilizing. It will have been a factor, I think, in making him question to what extent his future lies with the team." So basically, as you so nicely said, there's basically two ownership groups that both claim to own this team. One wants Horner out of there, allegedly, and the other one allegedly wants to keep him on board. But it's incredible, right? I mean, we're starting to see.
But Mark, it's even more complex than that, right? It's that.
Well, yeah, that's
like,
it.
So you got the ownerships. Yep. Yeah, it's you've got Helmut Marko that is staking claim to this team. And of course, he has the backing of Max Verstappen. And I think that it's broadly and widely known now that Max Verstappen has an exit clause in his contract in the event that Helmut Marko departs the team. And he's incredibly loyal to Marko because he's the one that gave him that ride in 2015.
Yes.
Endlessly loyal to Marko. Marko clearly is not happy with Christian Horner and Christian Horner's role, that ultimately this meant, I think 10 years from now, you and I might sit here and we could look back on what was an in-flight dynasty that fell apart because of personality and integrity and ethics and morals. Like, it's going to be a textbook definition of what can happen with terrible leadership.
Well, that is a great point, Mark, because that is just it exactly. Like, when have we ever seen like a dynasty in the making? Because they're not quite there yet. I mean, they've been dominant for a couple of years. I mean, the past decade, Mercedes dynasty, absolutely, and make any parallels you want to in any other sport, but we've literally never seen one unravel in front of our eyes in real time as potentially we're seeing right now. Because that's a great point that you raised too, because Max is very loyal to Helmut Marko. And, I sometimes forget that Marko was instrumental to bringing him there, because 10 years ago, Toto was trying to get him into the Mercedes system by offering him a reserve driver role. And Marco gives him the opportunity to go to what was then Toro Rosso or RB Visa Zozu Vaz or whatever it is nowadays.
It's AlphaTauri.
It's AlphaTauri. That actually rolls off the tongue a little bit. But it's just like, if you don't kind of like frame it in that context, it's like, why does Max and like this 83-year-old Austrian dude have such this, you know, intense bromance? But it makes sense because Helmut is the one that helped him get him into the team, helped to basically build that team around him. And now they're reaping the results of it. I mean, you know, the whole getting the Honda engines and keeping Honda engines and everything's like that. You know, it's incredible. It really is incredible to see this now falling apart. And I can't help but think, but what Dieter Mateschitz, he must be rolling in his grave right now. I mean, the team that he built up from nothing is literally falling apart. And I was just wondering, I was just talking, Mark, when did Mateschitz pass away? Was it last year or was it 2 years ago? Are we coming up on the first or second?
Early 23, yeah. I think, early 23.
Yeah, because like it was in and around Miami. I just couldn't remember if it was Miami last year or if it was Miami 2 years ago. I mean, regardless, I mean, he hasn't been gone from this earth very long. And we see this going, I mean, it's incredible now. Like, I just, you know, the big question, and you've already mentioned it, is just like, are we going to watch this start to fall apart? Because if Nui leaves and he's just like, you know, I can't stay here anymore because of this situation, you know, morally, ethically, you know, I'm just done with it. You know, what's his name? Was it Jim Farley, the Ford CEO, said a couple of months ago he was very frustrated and upset about the lack of transparency.
Great point. Let's circle back to the Ford. So yeah. This entire situation, and I think the knives are out now, and clearly they're out in the direction of Christian Horner, that as the team principal, you are responsible for everything that happens in and around the ecosystem that is this Formula One team. Yep. And I love that word that you used. It is unraveling so quickly as to be almost blinding. And I think, you know, sometimes we can be sensationalist when we talk about people because we want to spur interest and create excitement and have these fun narratives to talk about. There's no superlatives when it comes to Adrian Newey, that he is arguably the greatest technical mastermind in the history of this sport. He is absolutely sensational, has delivered unquantifiable value to every organization that he's ever been to. And he midstream in the period of epic dominance is reported to be walking away from this organization. Mm-hmm. And it's reported, like you said, because he's become incredibly uncomfortable with the circumstances within that factory. And the circumstances is the bitter war between the ownership, the fact that Helmut Marko seems to be in one camp that's very, I would say, separate from where Christian Horner is. And then there's this ongoing investigation with Christian Horner. And, you know, I trust that investigation is going to get somewhere fruitful, but it all goes, yeah. And maybe that's part of this too, right? Is that he's inside, he may have more line of sight, and he might be throwing us up his arm saying, like, how is that the outcome of this investigation? That it might be more broadly known within the walls of that factory in Milton Keynes as to what's going on. And he might be saying, well, look, if the organization draws a conclusion that is in opposition to the facts on the ground, like it's terrible. Like, ultimately, where's the accountability, man? Like, where does the buck stop here? Team is unraveling. You're losing your chief technical officer, reportedly, and Max Verstappen is reportedly having conversations with other teams while under contract for effectively forever. It's certainly not unprecedented, but this is shocking, absolutely shocking. And let's be fair, that I'm not saying that Adrian Newey's departure will catapult this team into the abyss of P10 in the championship, right? There's some very talented people on the technical side of this business, but the reality is he's got them to a place within the current regulation set that's made them very successful. We don't know how much work has happened on the 2026 cars. We know that the FIA and F1 are trying to push development further into the future because they don't want teams building up an advanced benefit and advantage. So the reality, if he does depart, they might be relying on incredibly green talent to build and develop the ground effects and that car in 2026. Like, this might not have a huge impact next year because I would say most of the groundwork for the 2025 car already exists. We're seeing on the track this year.
Yep.
But it could have catastrophic impacts on 26. And if you're Max Verstappen and you're sitting here, you know what, am I going to commit to Red Bull now knowing that 2026 car is a gigantic question mark? That you know what? I have all the confidence in that, like, all regardless of what's going on with Christian Horner and all the politics and all the backroom brawling and all that crap. If I know that Adrian Newey is steering the ship that is the development of this car, I can feel pretty good that I'm going to have a competitive package. But if he's gone and all of this is happening, why do I want to stay around for this? And then if you're Christian Horner, if you're the ownership, like, how do you continue to rationalize the retention of Christian Horner's current role? Like, as much as he, you know what, he brokered some of the deals to bring Ford in, and he brokered the deal to bring Adrian Newey in early on in his reign with this team. Like, ultimately, you're also responsible for the fact that this is unraveling, like you said.
Well, not only that, I mean, can you imagine? Okay, so I was talking about it last week on the show, Mark. There's three kind of key components to a winning package. One is the power unit. One is the car itself. The tires are negligible because everybody has the same tires. It's not like 20 years
ago. Great
call. Yep. And then other one is the driver, of course. So if you've got one out of three of those things, you're not going anywhere. You could have a great car and bad everything else and kind of work around it. But if you've got two of those three things, which is probably basically McLaren or Ferrari, to an extent Aston Martin, you're going to get podiums. Maybe if the circumstances are right, you're going to have a look at a win. But if you've got all three, because let's not forget, Max Verstappen himself is worth a couple of tenths a second per lap in identical machinery. I mean, look where Sergio is compared to where Max Verstappen is. But can you imagine that this whole thing blows up in real time in front of us? Newey leaves. This story about Max shopping around has been there for, what, a month now? 6 weeks? Like, I've almost lost track. Does it even go back to February or January, whenever this Horner thing started? It's been out there for a long time, but all of a sudden you lose the guy that designs that winning car. You lose that guy that's already won a couple of championships in that car, was, you know, designed by that guy that's already left. It's like, how soon does, you know, the whole thing implode? Because all of a sudden these, like, big blue chip sponsors that are paying tens or hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it might be to put their logo on the side of the car, it's like, well, we're paying you a premium to advertise our brand on a premium, you know, on a team that should be, like, hitting home runs all the time. And all of a sudden it's falling apart because of this scandal, and all these people that have been instrumental to that ethically and morally are like, you know what, I'm done, I'm walking away. And then this could, like, I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on the situation, but it could have the potential to really mushroom into maybe not an existential threat to Red Bull, but I mean, it could decimate that team to, you know, what it is right now, to maybe something we haven't seen it in the 20 plus years they've been in the sport.
You touched on something interesting a couple of minutes ago, and I want to circle back to it. And that's the fact that we have this impending partnership between Red Bull and Ford. Mm-hmm. And of course, Ford struck that deal with the understanding that Adrian Newey was going to continue to be the chief technical officer, and with the understanding that the best driver in the world was going to be a part of this team. And they're sitting here, and you make that comment that they, I think, were very uncomfortable with the outcome and the lack of transparency around that investigation. And I believe they still are, based on everything I've heard.
Yep.
I think that's probably one of the chief drivers for Adrian Newey's departure from this team. As I understand it, he's an individual of enormous integrity and enormous moral values. And I think he's probably become uncomfortable operating in that environment. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you've got Ford, this big, you know what, US-based global corporation, and they've got to be looking like, what are we getting ourselves into here? That we could now make the effort of partnering and pouring a ton of money into this team, and not only could our brand be damaged by association, but we might not even be a successful Formula One team. That there's no guarantee. Like, and that's the other question for 2026, right? It's like, it's a new regulation set, new aerodynamics, active aero, all that kind of stuff. Yep. And now they're going to have to do that without Adrian Newey. And Adrian Newey, by the way, is arguably the greatest mastermind in the history of the sport when it comes to understanding ground effects. It's where he really flourishes. He's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're also going to have a new power unit, because you're going to be rolling out the Red Bull powertrain / Ford electro, like blah, 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 blah. Like it's, yeah, 2026 is going to be a huge, huge question mark. And I'm not suggesting for a second that Ford's looking to exit this partnership, but I think they've got to be asking some pretty hard and difficult questions in Detroit, which was, did we do our due diligence with respect to the personalities in this organization before we jumped into a contract? And I should clarify as well, because you know what, we're criticizing Christian Horner here as well, but Helmut Marko is not an angel in any of this.
Not by
any
means.
Reality is that I think in any other organization, he probably would have been retired. And I'm saying that as a verb, that the organization would have pushed him into retirement because he said some outrageous things in the last couple of years.
Well, how many
and
times have we talked about some of his, like,
oh my God,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
100 times. So now all of a sudden, I think in the shadow of the scandal that is Christian Horner, he, as in comparison, as a comp, all of a sudden looks good. Like he does not look good, but they've retained him because they've known that the presence of Helmut Marko is the key to keeping Max Verstappen happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all shocking. Just shocking. And I didn't believe the Adrian Newey thing was going to happen, man. I just didn't believe it was going to happen. And reportedly it's done.
Yeah. And that's a crazy thing because I kind of thought it was like one of those kind of like juicy rumors, just like the, you know, the Max to Mercedes thing and Jos meeting with Toto at his, you know, motorhome or whatever it is. And all these things, they're fun to talk about because it, you know, rumors are fun, right? But when
we don't have a podcast without that type of stuff, man, let's be honest.
Exactly. But now it gets like really, really juicy. And it's funny too. You make a really good point because like Helmut Marko, he almost, I would say he comes off looking like an angel in this situation. But if we're going to use like, say, a cowboy movie metaphor, Christian Horner, for one reason or another, whatever it is, because we don't know exactly the circumstances. There's a lot of like, you know, hearsay out there and a lot of speculation. He clearly is wearing the black hat. Max Verstappen wearing the white hat, you know, as the good guy. Helmut Marko, I think he's wearing a gray hat now. He can't be the good guy. And he's definitely, well, I mean, he's not looking like the bad guy at the moment, even though his, you know, he's not the cleanest and, you know, he's had his issues in the past. But it is unreal because Newey, like you say, one of the all-time greats when it comes to designing cars. See, like, there's only two other names that immediately pop into my mind. Well, a couple. Colin Chapman, the brain behind Lotus, and really, I guess the forefather, or the father of like the modern Formula One car, John Barnard, who I believe, did he not create like the carbon fiber monocoque back in the 80s? Ross Brawn and Adrian Newey. I mean, there's lots of brilliant people that have been involved in the sport over the years, but they're not a dime a dozen. They're exceedingly difficult to come by, and there's many brilliant engineers and designers and things like that, but these people are the visionaries, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I pulled up the Wikipedia page for Adrian Newey right now because I wanted to make sure that I could fact check a couple of things. But according to Wikipedia, Newey designed cars have won 12 World Constructors and 13 World Drivers Championships. So get this. This is just incredible. So 92 with Nigel Mansell, 93 with Alain Prost. They won the Constructors in 94, in 96, Damon Hill, 97, Jacques Villeneuve, 98 with McLaren, Mika Hakkinen, 99 with Mika Hakkinen, again with McLaren. And then like you alluded to earlier, he ran off four straight with Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull from 2010 to 2013. 2021, Max won the Drivers, and the last 2 years, they've won the Drivers and the Constructors Championships. And what's remarkable about this, man, is this success has extended 30 years. How many different iterations of the regulatory cycles have we been through? That it's not like there's been one long regulatory cycle, like a 30-year regulatory cycle, and he's been successful. Like he's able to adapt every single time. Like a Formula One car in 1992 has nothing in common with a Formula One car in 2023.
It's like Fred Flintstone's car.
Yeah. And he could be successful at every single one of these. And again, like, I think I would be remiss if I didn't give Newey's memoir, How to Build a Car, a prop, some shine here. Make sure you head over to Amazon. It was published in November 2017. Get the hard copy because it looks really good on your shelf. That's a fantastic book. But just sensational, man. And like I said, I think there's going to be case studies written about, you know, how to build something and then how to let it, how to tear it down. You know what I mean? And I'm still, that those comments about the lack of transparency around those investigations regarding the allegations of Christian Horner, like, honestly, man, like, I'm still deeply uncomfortable with the outcome. I'm deeply uncomfortable with the transparency that I think we all assumed that, hey, he's done, this team's ready to move on. And they probably would have been, organizationally and competitively, they would have been better off moving on from Christian Horner. And it probably, not even probably, if allegations, man, even if they're 10% true, it would have been the right thing to have moved on and made very clear to the entire Formula One community that we do not tolerate that type of behavior from anyone, let alone a prominent team principal. But here we are, man, April 25th, he's still at the steward of this team as it's unraveling around him.
Yeah. And that's a crazy thing, right? Because I totally get and understand, like, the whole, you know, you want to protect people's privacy and things like that, but it's also very easy to play in that gray area, right? It's like, when does, you know, protection of personal information and privacy, when does it cross the line into cover up and obfuscating and, you know, or just, you know, basically lack of transparency, period. But also very interesting here, Craig Slater is now reporting, as we've been rambling on for the past 25 minutes.
Okay. Breaking news.
So breaking news on top of breaking news is now, this is incredible, Mark. This is going to blow your mind. Okay. So what originally Craig was saying is that Newey under contract till the end of May 25. So he would be then have to serve a year of gardening leave. So he would not be able to officially start working for another team until 2027, which is amazing. I mean, this, you know, for somebody that's been so successful and he's 65, I mean, he's at the retirement age. And I mean, obviously he loves what he's doing. If he, you know, decides he wants to, you know, move on to another team rather than just walking away from the sport, period. But that, you know, that to me says something that he's prepared to walk away, you know, with this amount of time left on the contract, sit out another year to come back when he's 67, 68, and, you know, take on a new project at that point. I mean, that in and itself, I think, just goes to say, okay, the situation is this serious that I'm willing to walk away for this amount of time before I can start working again.
Here, let me share some thoughts on that. And I was just, as you were speaking, I was kind of thinking through this. So I think if he exits the team, he will certainly not step into the office for another Formula One team until May or June of 2025. But realistically, I don't think, given what he's contributed to the history of the sport, I think if Red Bull were to enforce a gardening leave period in excess of his actual contract period, I think that would be an absolute scandal. So while I don't think he's going to suit up, what am I talking about here? He's not an NBA player. While I don't think he's going to step into the factory of another team until the middle of next year, I certainly don't think that, and maybe there's a very large check that changes hands to make this happen, but I cannot believe that they would, even Red Bull, I cannot believe that they would do so much to diminish the final years of kind of his fruitful professional career by making him sit out for 2 or 3 years on gardening leave. Like, you're right, he's 65 right now, so he sits out a year. So his birthday is December 26th, Boxing Day. So he'll be 66 next year. Again, it's 66, it's 2024, that's the new 42. He's probably got, if he wants, he's probably got another 4 or 5 years in him. But I think it's probably fair to talk about where he would go, right? And we've talked in the past about the fact that Lawrence Stroll has been very clear and very vocal about kind of seeking his services, and that would be a good fit, right? So for those of you that don't know, the Aston Martin factories at Silverstone, it's like immediately adjacent to the Formula One track. You can hit the track with a golf ball from their factory, and that's only about 40 minutes away from Milton Keynes. So the reality is, you know what, if he was to switch to Aston Martin, his commute changes a little bit in the morning. Like, it's not a kind of a massive substantial change in his life if he feels good about what's happening with that team and with Honda. Alternatively,
well, maybe, can I just jump
maybe he wants to go to Maranello. I don't know. Please, yeah. Yeah.
The Maranello one makes sense because he was seen in that part of Italy at the airport. It's like, well, why would you be there, like, in the course of your daily business? There's no reason for him to be there in the course of his daily business, you know, so something's funny there. But that's a great point, you know, like a good discussion to have about, like, Aston Martin, because they're going to become like a Honda works engine team in a couple of years. You know, Dewey has this, you know, he's worked with them, he's designed a car.
I never even thought about that.
You know, the synergy
that didn't even occur to me.
Right?
So yeah, he obviously has a relationship with the chief engineers and all the technical people on the Honda team. He's probably relatively familiar with their development trajectory.
Yep.
That never even occurred to me that there's those synergies between he and the man. I think we're piecing this together. He's gonna be in he's gonna be in Silverstone in June 2025, baby.
And I can see how this goes now. I can see the chairman, and you need me to explain that the chairman is Lawrence Stroll at this point, you know, refer to him by name, shame on you. He's just the chairman. I think the chairman goes over to Adrian Newey's house, basically sits down across the table from him, gives him a blank check, and just says, Adrian, fill out whatever you want, you know, because I mean, Lawrence has talked for years about like this Aston Martin project. And, you know, I beat a little bit silly there, but Lawrence has talked about for years that they're not just there to make up the numbers. They want this project to become something. They want to win races. They want to win championships. It's, you know, I'm still convinced, and I'm sure you are too, Mark, is that the Aston Martin thing is not a vanity project for Lawrence Stroll. We can have the side discussion about Lance and what he's doing in that team, but I believe Lawrence himself is sincere in the in that bid to become a world champion. So, you know, interesting. That, I think, could be very, very juicy. So this is unreal, you know, but
it's funny. I'm not necessarily an advocate of anything that Jos Verstappen says, but if you remember back in March, and I quote, he said that Horner was in danger of tearing the team apart. And that is literally what we're seeing happening in front of us right now.
It is, you know, and it's, I wouldn't say it's funny, but I thought that Jos was just, you know, exaggerating or being,
me too.
Was it hyperbolic? The word, you know, is it hyperbole? Just, you know, really blowing things out of proportion. And I must admit that I was a little bit conflicted when I heard those comments or read those comments from Jos. I'm just like, is he just trying to leverage, you know, like how close is this to the truth? But, you know, fast forward, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks later or whatever it is, I think there certainly is something to that. I mean, crazy, crazy stuff, Mark. Who would have thought? And I mean, in a year that we've already talked about the Christian Horner thing, in a year that we've had the Andretti news, the Lewis news, and that other sidebar to the Lewis story about the pretty interesting season and story that is Carlos Sainz, what that's been. I mean, it is. It's unreal. I mean, there's a lot of big stories that have been compressed into the first third of this year or quarter of this year.
Unfortunately, none of them to do with what's happening on the track, but within the greater Formula One ecosystem for sure. And I keep playing this now that you've kind of mentioned the Mr. Lawrence Stroll, like I keep playing this out of my head that what would you pay for Adrian Newey, right? Like you're allowed to pay the top three people within your organization in excess of the cost cap. So do you pay him $30 million a year?
Dude, 40 Lawrence million a year? Has deep pockets, but let's not forget who is one of the sponsors, I believe, still of Aston Martin.
Saudi Aramco, right?
Exactly. Bottomless pockets, right?
You literally, if you have the opportunity to sign him, if it's $20 million, $30 million, $40 million a year, you do it. Because the other thing here too is, think about the exceptional talent that you will attract by having him. If you have working in your factory, every single top aerodynamist and engineer in the industry will be knocking down the doors to be a part of this organization. So top talent attracts top talent. Okay. He's worth whatever you're willing to pay him.
Well, let's look at it this way. I mean, you know, regardless whether or not Lance Stroll should be in that car, Lawrence has invested into trying to make Lance a race, like a championship caliber driver. He's had him partnered up with four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel. He has him currently partnered up with two-time world champion Fernando Alonso that, perhaps by osmosis or something, Lance is going to absorb the characteristics and habits that you'll make, you know, like that wins six championships between two different drivers. So just from that model alone, he's willing to invest in that. But can you see that, like, you can invest in a guy like Adrian Newey to come now or next year or whatever it is, 18 months from now, however that works out. But like you say, he attracts all that talent. That not only becomes like a medium-term solution, it becomes a long-term solution, because yes, all these people that are going to come.
Start nurturing your own talent. And exactly. You know, his runway is maybe 5-10 years, and he'll look to retire.
Right, exactly.
But in the meantime, you've nurtured and developed his successors,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that sets you on a growth trajectory for the next 5 or 10 years. By the way, I'm jumping all over the place here, but you had in the outline today that story from Jonathan Noble over at motorsport.com. And it was a quote from Christian Horner saying, what was it here? Says Christian Horner, Toto Wolff should focus on his own F1 problems, not the quote unquote unavailable Verstappen. Are you sure he's not available, Christian Horner? Because I'm pretty sure you also said, and your organization was adamant, that Adrian Newey wasn't going anywhere. So this is also the ultimate, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's like the ultimate play by Toto Wolff. Like, even if Max Verstappen's not interested, the fact that he's having those conversations for you undermines the credibility and the legitimacy of Christian Horner, right?
Yes.
That if Max Verstappen is content and he's happy, why is he even entertaining conversations with Toto Wolff? So even if Toto's not interested in Max, and even if Max isn't really interested in going to Mercedes, the fact that they're having those conversations is damaging to Christian Horner's credibility and that of Red Bull.
Plot twist nobody saw coming. Okay, Lewis leaves at the end of the year. They put in Kimi Andrea Antonelli into the cars alongside George Russell for next year. Max Verstappen decides, just like Adrian Newey, you know what, I can't work at Red Bull anymore. This is just way too distasteful. You know, it's against, you know, like my personal ethics, even though my father-in-law is Nelson Piquet.
Low bar.
Yeah, okay, so we'll move on beyond that. But, you know, I'm going to walk away. I'm going to break this contract, because we all know that Formula One contracts are written on the back of napkins and are virtually worthless, decides to sit out. And then George Russell, let's assume his contract ends next year. Then the year after, 26, Max goes to drive for Mercedes alongside Kimi Andrea Antonelli. And, you know, George is on the way. You know, I'm just like wildly speculating now. The point is, I feel like we're in unprecedented territory, because all these stories that we've talked about, none of them are unusual. I mean, the Christian one is, you know, Horner one is unusual, but big stories happen in sports from time to time. You don't get this many big headlines: the Horner one, the Andretti one, the Lewis Hamilton one, the Max Verstappen one, the Newey one, happening in such a condensed and compressed time frame. That's what makes it unique.
You know, we for years have been sitting here talking about what team is going to come and knock the crown off of Red Bull. You know, it's ultimately going to be Red Bull is going to knock it off their own head,
yes,
right? And like, they're going to win this championship. They are going to win this year. The reality is, this car is locked and loaded. You have Max Verstappen driving. You will win this championship. And you'll probably win at least one of the two next year, because next year's car is going to be so heavily based on this year's car that really you're locked and loaded through 25. Where things could go completely off the rails is 2026. New car, new chassis, new aero, and a new power unit. And no eight. And for the, I guess right now we're talking April. So really the last 20 months, 22 months leading into the launch of that car at the beginning of the 2026 season, you're going to be without Adrian Newey. That is, again, very talented people there, and hopefully they've learned a lot, but I think it's going to be very, very hard to compensate for his departure, because I think as a visionary, he's probably got plans for that car in his head, and his exit's coming so quickly as well. It's not like he's got 6 months where he can sit down and lay out the plans and there can be a really strong knowledge transfer. Like, this is going to happen very, very quickly.
Yeah, well, if it hasn't
happened already, he's not already stepped out of the factory for the last time.
Well, we don't know, right? I mean, this is like literally broken. This news is broken in the last hour before, as we were literally just getting everything booted up to record this episode. So who knows what it's going to be like? I mean, it's already dinner time here on the West Coast, and we're always 12 hours out of the European centric news cycle for Formula One, because most of the teams are based there. So we're always out of sync. So it is just, it's unreal that, and that's why I think there's a lot to this story. If this was nothing major, why did Sky publish this in the middle of the night in the UK at the moment? You know, this is obviously a scoop, and it's crazy. It really is.
The other consideration in all of this is if Red Bull stay, and again, we're assuming he wants to continue working. And the reality is at this point in his career, he's 65. He's won, like we said, 12 drivers' championships, 13 constructors' titles. You know, he might be content to settle into retirement and enjoy the next 20 or 30 years of his life. Like, you and I are extrapolating and making assumptions that he wants to continue to compete. Mm-hmm. Maybe he is happy sitting out for a couple of years and coming back. I don't know that would make sense, because you would think he would want to have his fingerprints all over the 2026 car for whatever team he's going to. But it's also very possible that Red Bull is going to play hardball here and they're going to enforce his gardening leave through 2027, in which case he may just say, you know what, I'm happy to retire at this stage and reevaluate things in a couple of years. Like, that's a very strong probability here as mm-hmm. well. But I think, just to kind of recap, if you're just tuning in, which is probably unlikely because this isn't a radio show, but Adrian Newey, is his departure from Red Bull is imminent. It's absolutely a shock. And based on everything that you and I are seeing being reported, both in the German press and the British press, it's just the situation at that team has become untenable, right?
And unreal.
You know,
unreal.
We talk about this, like Max Verstappen, the team's driver's father, is openly challenging and has for months the team principal, that Helmut Marko, whatever his role is, he's openly challenging Christian Horner in the media. And then the stable force, the backbone of the architecture of every single Red Bull car since 2006 is exiting the team midstream, mid-season. Shock, 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 shock. And I think the accountability, every single ounce of it, ultimately has to fall on Christian Horner, because he built this mess. He allowed all of this to happen.
Well, then that becomes like a, you know, and I know we're speculating and going really down deep into the theoretical rabbit hole here, but if the whole thing implodes, then where does it line up against other scandals like Crashgate and Spygate, et cetera? Like, is this like a whole new thing? I mean, it would be unprecedented. I mean, I can't really think off the top of my head anything similar. And like any other, we've seen cheating scandals in different sports. In soccer, there was that referee in the NBA, for example. I mean, we've seen other scandals for other reasons, and athletes getting arrested or doing distasteful things that surface. But this, to me, Mark, you know, if this becomes a thing and it actually does literally fall apart at the seams, it would be unique, in a completely unique situation.
There are now a couple of publications in Germany that are reporting that his intent is to go to Ferrari. I can't corroborate these because I'm not super familiar with these, and I don't speak German and I don't trust a translation service, but mm-hmm. there are a number of German, including F1insider.com, which is reporting that his intention is to sign with Ferrari following his Red Bull resignation. So crazy, 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 crazy. So this has clearly overshadowed everything else on the agenda today. I think we probably want to kind of revisit the championship standings and the fantasy news, but I feel like, Mark, we're probably well overdue for a commercial break.
Yeah, we are. We'll just step away really briefly to get a quick message from our sponsors when we come back on the flip side. I don't think we need to talk about the one story you already alluded to about Toto focusing on his own problems, rather than unavailable Max Verstappen. We're done with the Horner news for now, so stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, It's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back. And before we get into the championship, I'm going to flip it upside down. I'm going to take the usual thing, flip it around, do the fantasy standings first, because we have a bit of an opening at the top here. Holding steady at the top of the fantasy league is Seat for Science. So that's Ashish Yena, and they have 1,413 points. That is quite a bit of a lead up on Andy Taylor, who's now moved up into second. Andy has 1,256 points. Moving up into third is Kerry Duro F1. Dropping down into fourth is the Red Beards. Up into fifth now is last year's reigning champ, Michael Cronier, with It's Like This. Moving up into sixth is Goldstone. Moving up into seventh, that would have been a big jump up. Seventh now is Yuki's Tantrum. Dropping down into eighth is Nakunda Racing. Dropping down to ninth is Nick Pobednik F1. And down in tenth now is Big Prize Carreras. So where those points all come from is from the World Championship. So let's just go over that. Leading at the Drivers' Championship in 2024, Max Verstappen, 110 points after five races. Sergio Perez is second with 85. Charles Leclerc, third with 76. Carlos Sainz, only 7 points behind his Ferrari teammate. Then Lando Norris, rounding out the top five. Going down just in order here, down to 10. Oscar Piastri, George Russell, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, and ninth, and Lance Stroll, rounding out the top 10 in the Drivers' Championship with a rather unimpressive 9 points from five races. Over on the constructors' side, Red Bull 195 points, 151 for Ferrari in second, McLaren third with 96, Mercedes fourth with 52, Aston Martin is fifth with 40. Then going down 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 is Red Bull, Honda, RBPT. It's Racing Bull's garbage name that's so confusing. Then we have Haas, Williams, Alpine, and Sauber. And of course, those bottom three still do not have a single point after five races this year. Okay. I see one here with, okay. We were talking a little bit earlier about Max Verstappen and Helmut Marko. So this is a story written by Jamie Woodhouse over at planetf1.com called Helmut Marko tears into theory that Max Verstappen dominance has made F1 boring. Well, yeah, kind of it has. And I was thinking about it this past weekend watching the Chinese Grand Prix, Mark. I don't know about you, but I feel like, and this is no disrespect to Max because, I mean, he's obviously at the top of his game and he has been for some time, but I feel that if we just took Max out of the race classification or he just did race in general, if we just ignored him and just kind of went from second down, there's some pretty good things going on, but I don't agree. Well, I don't usually agree with Helmut Marko most of the time, but he says, quote, in terms of qualifying, Max has clearly taken a step. It was about time because in terms of pole positions, he is still a bit behind compared to victories. He's even better than last year. Max can focus even more and find a better setup with GP so that the car is good enough for qualifying, but at the same time, he also keeps his lead in the race. Yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that? I don't think so, but I completely disagree with that. I think that, sadly, Max has kind of made it a little bit predictable.
Yeah, I often think back to, and I'll kind of make this quick because I know we used up a lot of time, but I often think back to that period of Lewis Mercedes dominance, and I was clearly I was clearly cheering for Lewis, but even at that point, man, I was very well aware that that reign of dominance was damaging and terrible for the sport. And I'll be honest, man, like it becomes less enjoyable. Like even if it's somebody you support, like you earn this or you develop this realization that what's happening is not for the greater good of the sport. And I think if you're as close as Helmut Marko is, you know, you're in the garage, you're celebrating, you're cheering, you see the delight on people's faces, you go back to the factory and they hold the trophy up. Like that's all very enjoyable. But if you're more detached, that you realize that, hey, this isn't good for the sport. And F1 is absolutely horrifyingly boring. And I'll be honest, man, I haven't watched a live F1 Grand Prix this year. I mean, the reality is like, I'm excited and I get up at 5 a.m. when it's unpredictable and you don't know the outcome. But if the outcome is presupposed, like it's predetermined, like it's really hard to make that commitment in your life. So yes, F1 is boring this year and last year and the year before.
Yeah. I mean, like, especially when you get like these huge time differences and things like that, you know, I feel exactly the same way. Like I'll watch the race. I'm just not getting up at 5 a.m. to do it. I don't mind watching it when I'm already up and watching it later on in the day when I feel like, you know, it's a little bit more, you know, more reasonable and I'm actually awake to do so. Next story here. This is interesting because, you know, we're always critical about the stewards in Formula One. Michael Massey deservedly got, you know, all the criticism that that was coming his way after Abu Dhabi 2021. Anyways, 6 weeks after the finish at the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, IndyCar has decided to change the result of that. And so this was the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg was held back.
No, Mark, this isn't possible. You can't go and change the result of a race after it's happened. Unprecedented.
Well, IndyCar did, you know, and
how
could the
FIA do it for Indy but not F1? Wait a minute. The FIA isn't the regulatory body for Indies. That's how. So yes, I know where you're going with this, but it's honestly like I'm an Indy fan and I'm I'm a big Indy fan, and I absolutely support. I support this decision.
Yes,
that
so do
when
I.
You can't go back, and this was a very clear breach, by the way. This wasn't that the race director had errored, that this was drivers who very specifically had not complied with the rules of the sport when it comes to push to pass, but ultimately that this is the right thing. And you know what? I get it. It's not a good look, but it reinforces the integrity of the championship. And as an IndyCar fan, I feel much better. Like when I go now and I look at the championship standings, I feel a lot better about that, knowing that the sport took a hard line and they had to do something very difficult, which was take away race classification from drivers. It's the right thing. And I'm so happy to see it happen.
Well, basically, like you say, okay, so they have this push-to-pass button in the car, so they're not allowed to use that or deploy that during restart. So Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin both deployed that push-to-pass on a new on a restart. That violates IndyCar's rules. Team Penske, they actually, you know, they agree, well, at least publicly in their statement, said they accepted the decision and the penalties that were applied by IndyCar. So that means, like you say now, Newgarden's disqualification means he loses the lead of the championship, and Scott Dixon is now taking over that, or has taken over that that spot. So, you know, maybe it took a little bit of time, but I think justice has been served. And I think above all, it doesn't matter what series it is, the integrity of the championship has to be paramount. And I think that's why even now there is a bitter taste, regardless if you're a Max fan or a Lewis fan. I think that, you know, and going back to what we were talking about off the top of the show, if we look at the 2021 championship objectively, Mark, you know, like just from that, you know, that broad perspective, that, you know, it still leaves a bad taste in the mouth. I don't begrudge Max for winning the championship.
Neither do I.
That Lewis lost that eighth championship. It, you know, I mean, the thing, like the situation in which Lewis lost and Max won was not right. And it just bugs me even now. I mean, Max was always going to win a championship. Lewis should have won that championship. But, you know, it's just the shenanigans and the way that, you know, that restart was handled. And I wouldn't say that the response to it was botched. You know, they just kind of didn't really deal with it, and then ultimately threw Michael Massey under the bus. I mean, is how you could sum it up, right?
And then at points they blamed the fans. Like it was
shame on you, Mark Hamilton.
How dare you misinterpret our misinterpretation of the rules?
Yeah, right?
Like, how dare you? Yeah, and I think you know you and I going back to 2022. Like we had talked about the fact that look, we both acknowledged the outcome wasn't ideal and the rules weren't followed and the FIA's response was inadequate, incorrect, invalid, terrible. But you know we also kind of made the acknowledgement that hey, we are going to continue to support and follow this championship, knowing that it's deeply flawed and that it's a black mark. It's a very dark kind of spot on the history of this championship. And, you know, I wonder in hindsight too, Mark, that had that outcome happened at a race, let's say it happened in Bahrain or in Monaco or in Spain, in a race that wasn't consequential to the outcome of the championship, or if it was to happen today, I wonder if the reaction of the FIA would have been different. And you know, it's funny I get from the FOM's perspective that look, as the body that's responsible for the commercial side of the sport, so basically selling the championship and getting people interested in it, I kind of get why you might not want that the outcome be reversed or changed in some sort of way. But if you're the FIA, like, your only role is the regulatory and the governance of the rules, that would you not want to correct this? That in hindsight, it was more shameful on the part of the FIA than certainly it was on FOM, because if your one sole responsibility is to govern the rules or govern the sport by the rules as they're written, and you can't do that, and then you're not willing to make changes retroactively to reflect the rules as they're written, like, what are you doing here?
Well,
and
that's
it. Again, we're sitting here almost four years later, Mark, still talking about it. Three years later, still talking about it.
You know, but you make a good point there, Mark, is that, I when you were speaking, I was thinking that, well, if that had happened definitely before the summer break, I think maybe they look at that completely different. Maybe up until the end of the summer, maybe up until the end of September or October, before things really, you know, who knows, maybe at a point, like you say, in the season where it would just be another race and it wasn't one that was like, you know, the championship decider, because, you know, they could have done something, reversed it then, because they, you know, hindsight would always be 20/20 after that, right? You could go, oh, well, you know, had they, you know, had Max not been, or had they not reversed that, the results of that race, Max would have won, he would have beat Lewis, or however it would have worked, you know, and Lewis, he's the 8-time world champ, you know, Max would have won that race. But yeah, that's something interesting to ponder. Talk about going about down rabbit holes. Now, talking about another rabbit hole of speculation, going to talk now about Andretti, because they have revealed the number of people they have working at their new Silverstone factory, which they just moved into just several weeks ago. So they have opened the doors. They got about 120 people working in the factory right now, and they are set to expand up to 400 people, as you know, as they still work towards getting a spot on the grid. And this is unreal, because, you know, talk about the whole field of dreams, build it and they will come thing. I mean, I don't know what to make of this, because I don't feel that, well, I mean, I don't know, obviously, but, you know, maybe Michael Andretti has some more insight as to where things may go with this team, but it seems awfully hopeful that they're going to get this grid slot in 2026.
They're inspirational.
Yeah. And yeah.
I think you and I sat here and let's go back to 2020. the FIA, the teams, the FOM. I always say the FOM, but I think I'm supposed to just say FOM. FOM, FIA. Now I'm getting confused. FOM, the FIA, and the teams collaborated on creating the latest iteration of the Concorde Agreement. And as we've said so many times, the Concorde Agreement has an allowance for 12 teams, and that an 11th or 12th team could be added if they paid an anti-dilution fee of $200 million. And last year, the FIA initiated that Expressions of Interest protocol, which enabled Yes. interested teams to basically come and present their plans to join the Formula One grid. And a number of teams did so, or a number of prospective teams did so, and the FIA kind of waved those away. But they said, hey, this Andretti bid looks really good. You know what? We authorize you to go and talk to the FOM about, you know, the commercial side of this agreement, because the Concorde Agreement says you can join if you pay $200 million. Go and talk to FOM. Of course, FOM was mad because, grr, we want to protect the financial integrity of the teams. Grr, grr, we want to keep the teams happy. And this is one of those few times where I kind of am in alignment with the FIA that the Concorde Agreement allows for 12 teams, at least have that conversation. And if a really strong candidate comes along, like what is the competitive reason for declining that team's admission to the championship? And mm-hmm. Andretti is possibly, like, if you look at the history of the sport, like I can say now quantifiably that there has never been a better equipped and better financed perspective admission to the championship than Andretti. And I think what's really alarming is you and I sat here the last couple of years assuming that the next Concorde Agreement would have the same allowance for the 11th and 12th team, but they would revisit the anti-dilution fee and it would be $1 billion. Andretti would pay $1 billion, they get their grid spot and everyone's happy. But what's really alarming is that the news that you and I are hearing and are being fed through secondary sources is that the new Concorde Agreement scrubs out the language with the allowance of an 11th or 12th team, that the new Concorde Agreement, and again, we've not been able to corroborate this, but what we're hearing is that the existing teams and FOM are going to scrub out language allowing an 11th and 12th teams, and they are going to concretely put in stone the fact that this is a 10-team championship, meaning that everything that Andretti is doing is a complete waste of time. And again, he may mm-hmm. ultimately buy a team, absorb a team, but that the teams and FOM are trying to crystallize the championship in its current form, which is fucking sorry, did I just swear? You're going to have to scrub that out, Mark. It's at the 58-minute mark when you go back and take this out. But they are completely corrupting the competitiveness of the championship, because they're basically saying that, look, you know what? The current teams, the current format of the championship, the current teams, this is it indefinitely. And that we are okay with teams like Haas and teams like AlphaTauri and teams like Williams competing and earning tens of millions of dollars while offering zero value to the championship and without even trying to win. And this is where I get so frustrated, man, that Andretti is making every effort to launch with a competitive team from the very start. Yet we have teams like Williams and Haas who cannot even be bothered to spend to the cost cap, despite being the fact that they were flush with cash because they just happened to be in the championship at the right time. They offer yep. zero value. They do not compete. So really what these teams are crystallizing is a 7-team championship, because you've got 3 teams that don't compete. In fact, you've got 1 team that shouldn't even be a part of the championship in AlphaTauri Toro Rosso. That they're crystallizing all the bad things about the championship, and they're undermining the competitive integrity of F1. And it's hugely disappointing.
Okay, well, let's unpack this, or let's bring another concept into the discussion here. So apparently the FIA, FOM, and the teams are now going to discuss a scenario in which they could expand the points-paying positions up to 11th and 12th.
Oh,
so,
dear God.
And you and I grew up in an era that they only gave out points to the first six
top
cars.
Six.
Top six, right? Then they expanded that up to 10. And if you were listening to David Croft at the Chinese Grand Prix last week during the Sky commentary, he wants to give out points, you know, basically across the board. Now, I'm going to preface what I'm going to say here with the fact that I have no financial skin in the game here. So I'm not one that's losing money on my investment in a Formula One team. But I think it's important to the integrity of the sport that there should be some challenge. Like, you know, I'm not of the Bernie Ecclestone school of thought for many different reasons, because, you know, a lot of the things he thought were distasteful. Anyways, at least from the point of view that Formula One should not be easy, you know? So, I mean, I don't mind that they give out points in the up to 10th, and you know, there's obviously financial incentives to score those points, because even if you get one or two, that means they're cutting you a check and prize money at the end of the year. But, you know, I'm reluctant, but I wouldn't say open. I'm partially agreeable to listen to some arguments for expanding those, you know, point paying positions up to 11th and 12th, which then seems kind of silly, because if you're going to give, you know, points to, if you're going to open that gate, you know, you're going to give points to more cars than not, then you might as well just go the entire way. And I feel that, you know, 10 for me seems the right amount of number, and going anything more than that is like, oh, it's the Formula One equivalent of the participatory ribbon that, like, I would get, like, in sporting events.
There you go.
That's
there
it, right? Go. Right?
Yeah, and this is one of those things that I don't love about MotoGP is MotoGP offers points up to P15. So P1 is 25, 20, 16, 13, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and they offer points in the sprint up to P9. I don't like that. I'm still uncomfortable with the fact that Formula One offers points up to P10, that a car that finishes P10 is typically not a particularly competitive car and is undeserving of those points. I'm totally uninterested in having a conversation about expanding to 11 and 12. And I think, and I'm trying to, and maybe Mark, you can articulate to me what the intent of this is or what the argument behind doing this is. Is it ultimately to create the perception that there's more competition than there is? Because to the point that you made a couple of minutes ago, that earning a championship point is supposed to be very, very difficult, right? Like, that is supposed to be an honor in and of itself that you've earned a championship point. And if more than half the grid earns a championship point just for showing up, it really devalues championship points altogether. And like you said,
agreed,
all of a sudden, agreed, it makes prize money more accessible to teams that have no busy earning prize money. That, yeah, I'm super uncomfortable with this. I don't like the fact that we offer points up to P10. It's not a hill I've ever been willing to die on. But the idea of offering points to P11 and P12 is deeply troubling to me. Not in the ways that all these other topics that we're talking about are, but it's just, I can't make a business case for this.
It seems like it's like almost like a little bit of corporate welfare, doesn't it? You know, it's like handing out money to like all the teams.
Exactly.
And and that's why it's infuriating to hear like this discussion that they want to lock this championship.
Pierre Elliott Trudeau of championship.
A little bit of Canadian money political
for everybody.
Money for everybody. But,
and
you know,
we, the fans, are paying the tax. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to stop there.
But you know, Mark, it's I wouldn't say it's funny, but what's interesting about that is I've lost the point I was thinking of, but they're talking about, on one hand, about locking this championship at 10, you know, at 10 teams. They're not going to let like potentially an Andretti come in, or the, you know, Gunther Steiner, who was a, you know, there's some rumors about him, and whoever the case may be. And I disagree with that on principle, because I think that, you know, for me, there's two criteria you must meet to be in Formula One. A, you've got to have the funds to do so, and B, you should be competitive or have the intent to compete once you get here. So, I mean, you got Haas on one hand, who are horrible, and on the other hand, you've got, say, Aston Martin, and at least, you know, publicly and forward-facingly, like, you know, they're attempting to be competitive in this championship, and they've made some leaps and bounds in the past couple of years. And I don't like locking it out, and I just kind of like shudder to think that, you know, we would have this perpetual championship with teams like Alpine and Haas and RB that, you know, really don't have any business to be there because they're not really competing. And, you know, we don't need to get down into the whole like AlphaTauri thing and the development team. We've been down that rabbit hole many, many times, but this sort of thing just sort of bugs me. Anyways.
Hey, how about a compromise? About a compromise? You let in an 11th team or a 12th team, even better, and then you award points up to P12. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm willing to compromise, but let's not continue to spread around points based on the current status quo.
No. I'm fine with that. I think that's a fair way to go. Okay, let's take another break. We'll come back. Got a couple of fun things we're going to talk about at the end here. And if you've got a big chunk of money in your back pocket, about £420,000, we'll give you an idea of what you can spend it on. So don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. All right, welcome back, and got a couple more things here before we turn off the lights this evening. First one, another big Ferrari piece of news. They have signed a big multi-year partnership with Hewlett-Packard, HP, who are the world's second largest PC vendor.
You got to pay for Adrian Newey somehow.
Well, you know, if they didn't have the money this morning, they certainly have it now this afternoon. But they are going to be the title sponsor of Ferrari, which I believe is going to be, what is it, Scuderia Ferrari HP. You know, this is a massive, massive thing. Also very cool because we've got Miami coming up next weekend. We're going to see a very unique Ferrari livery in Miami next weekend. Do you want to take this one, Mark? Or is there...
Yeah, I will. I would love to. But yeah. Can I just say this?
Sure.
You can tell I haven't been podcasting in a while because I keep saying I'm a lot. But I am so ecstatic with this Ferrari sponsorship that Hewlett-Packard, to me, the world's second biggest PC OEM computer manufacturer, they are such a family wholesome brand. Because if you flash back a couple of years ago, man, you and I were sitting here hashing out the BS that was Mission Winnow attached to this car, right? That a better tomorrow over at McLaren and Mission Winnow, like it was just so revolting. And it was as long as you have partners like that, it's really hard for me to support you and cheer for your success because you undo so much of the goodwill of having a competitive team by partnering with such a despicable brand like that. So the fact that
they wrap it up in sneaky marketing and branding and stuff, right?
Exactly. Like people would ask, what's Mission Winnow? Go and Google what Mission Winnow was. It's not what you think it was. It's basically a tobacco company with a fake mustache and a top hat and a big jacket on. Like it is literally tobacco money filtering its way into F1 and circumventing all of the kind of government regulatory laws that have been kind of imposed over the last 20 years. So anyways, HP is awesome. And then the other story, and this one is super exciting too, is I get really excited in the NFL and the NHL where they have these kind of reverse retro and color splash jerseys and all that kind of stuff. But Ferraro, my God, I've not podcasted in a while. Ferrari is going to be wearing blue for the Miami Grand Prix, reports motorsport.com. And I'm going to read here right now. And I quote from motorsport.com, Ferrari may be synonymous with the color red, but is often forgotten that for many years, their drivers and mechanics were in fact clothed in blue. And on rare occasions, their cars even raced in blue. So just in time for the Miami Grand Prix, a very tropical race, they are going to be wearing blue. So I don't know, Mark, and maybe you know this, I don't know if they're going to be rocking a different livery for the actual cars themselves, but at least the drivers will be adorned in a very, very kind of tropical baby blue, pastel blue that weekend. They're going to sell a ton of merch that even if this is just a merch play to generate some additional revenue that weekend, I'm totally cool with that. But some big news for Ferrari, they're going to be rocking a very cool blue palette during the Miami Grand Prix weekend. And they partnered with HP, and HP will be their title sponsor. So that brand will be adorned on all of their merch, effective almost immediately, and on the cars starting this next Grand Prix weekend.
Well, there is a tie into the U.S. Grand Prix because just looking through the notes here, they did race, get this, in 1959 at the U.S. Grand Prix at Sebring, Ferrari race. Well, there were
four Ferraris.
I remember
doing the podcast for that race.
Well, we're that old, literally. there were four Ferraris in the field that day. One of them was painted blue. So there was so they entered three in the traditional red for Tony Brooks, Cliff Allison, and Wolfgang von Trips. But Phil Hill, who was an American, and he was driving a Dino 246, was racing the U.S. national color. So it was blue with a white nose. So, you know, there is a tie-in. It would be, you know, the perfect time to do it in Miami. It would be very cool. And like you, I love to see like retro throwback jerseys and uniforms in any sport. And I would love to see that. I mean, remember a couple of years ago at the Japanese Grand Prix when Red Bull went with that all like that white livery with the, you know, like from
a turkey.
Was it Turkey? Well, yeah, I think it was Turkey.
Yeah, it was Turkey in 21.
Gorgeous.
That stunningly white Red Bull. My gosh, that car was gorgeous.
Yeah. You know what I think was a bit of a miss? I think it was last year that McLaren did it. Remember, they kind of had like this sort of mixed up jumble of like the one-off livery that had different colors from different eras. They had like the Dayglow orange like they had like in the late 80s, early 90s, and the silver and the black. I mean, all those colors were cool for different eras, but it would have been kind of neat to see one of those like historic McLaren liveries come back rather than just kind of a big mashup. Anyways, Mark, we haven't done this in some time, but I've got all this music queued up because I know you've got like over 400 grand all queued up here and ready to spend. And I know you're dying to tell everybody at home what they could spend their 413,000 pounds on, should they feel so inclined.
So a little backstory here. I am heading for an impending divorce because I am very bad with my money, and I may have gone to the bank and refinanced our house so I can pick this up. But for those of you that don't know, Casey Stoner is a former Australian MotoGP racer. He won two championships. He won a title in 2007 with Ducati, and he then transitioned over to Honda and won a championship in 2011 with the Honda Repsol, MotoGP team. Shockingly, he left the sport pretty quickly. I think he had exited the sport and retired by the end of 2012, but he was a sensational driver. But excitingly, there is a very, very, very cool piece of memorabilia that's coming up for auction, and that is Casey Stoner's actual 2007 championship winning Ducati. It's going to be on or going up for auction for about 413,000 pounds, like you said. So I think that translates into probably $600,000 to $700,000 Canadian, about $500,000 US. But this is an incredibly, incredibly exciting piece of merch for somebody that maybe does have deep pockets, because the benefit of buying a MotoGP bike is it's small enough that you could put it in the lobby of your office building, in your living room, put it in a glass showcase in your garage, that this would be a literal piece of motorsports history to have in your house. And the other thing that I understand, because I've been trying to dig into this, is oftentimes when you see old MotoGP bikes or Formula One cars going up for sale, the drivetrain is not a part of them. You don't get the engine, you don't get the drivetrain. So you get the suspension, you get the monocoque chassis. My understanding here is you actually get the gearbox and you actually get the unit or the engine itself, which is very, very cool. So by all accounts, it's going to be a complete package. Now, I don't think there's any expectation that somebody's going to actually go and pilot a 2007 championship winning Ducati MotoGP bike, but very, very, very cool. And again, just to be able to share a little bit of MotoGP history, that he was a sensational rider. He was deeply beloved by fans throughout the world. Won in 2007, won again in 2011, and then promptly exited and then tried his hand at four-wheel racing for a little bit as well, but a sensational rider. He's now 38. So again, shock exit because he left and retired so early. And then I think maybe the only other thing, Mark, I also appreciate you threw in this story as well. Lewis Hamilton says a potential MotoGP F1 shared weekend could be pretty epic, quote unquote. And you and I did that emergency podcast a couple of weeks ago. And we talked about the fact that Liberty is basically acquiring Dorna, which is the commercial rights holder for MotoGP. And this could create some really cool synergies between the two of them. And, you know, the more I unpack this in my head, obviously, I think Liberty is going to want to expose more people to MotoGP to help monetize that championship. And what better way to do that than maybe have a sensational week? Yeah, a bundle, right? Like we talk about bundles. bundling like home phones and cable TV and internet and all this kind of stuff. Like, bundle the two championships, have a couple of race weekends a year where both championships happen at the same place. That would be sensational. And of course, Lewis, who is a huge MotoGP fan, has piloted MotoGP bikes, has done MotoGP tests in the past, obviously a huge fan of this. And then the other thought I had too, Mark, is when I first started getting into MotoGP, which is around 2013, there used to be three races in the US. There's only one now. So for those of you that don't know, we race every April in Austin at the same circuit, the Circuit of the Americas, where Formula One goes towards the end of the season. But we used to race at Laguna Seca in Northern California. And I am so mad. I'll be eternally angry at myself that I could have gone, I could have flown into Oakland, I could have flown into San Francisco, driven to Monterey, gone to Laguna Seca and seen a MotoGP race on the West Coast. Never got to see it. That'll never happen again because there's a lot of NIMBYism and development happening around that track. But we used to race at Indy as well. There used to be three races.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
I would assume that with Liberty in charge, we'll probably see some additional MotoGP races on this side of the Atlantic. And maybe one of those is at Miami, although I think that would be a terrible race, but maybe we'll see some additional MotoGP races in North America. And then the only other thing too is, Mark, we are now three races into the 2024 MotoGP Championship, and championship is looking pretty good right now. Jorge Martin, the Spanish rider for Ducati for the Prima Pramac Racing Team, is sitting P1 on 80 points. He has two podium finishes and a race win in Portugal. And if you look at the Constructors Championship right now, Ducati, of course, they were absolutely sensational last year. They're leading the Constructors Championship on 96 points, followed by KTM, which is pretty close, on 76 points, Aprilia at 72. And then the two stalwarts, the two mighty manufacturers that have dominated this championship for so long, Yamaha sitting on a paltry 19 points, and Honda, their Japanese cousin, sitting on 8 points. Of course, Yamaha, Honda were both a disaster last year. They haven't been able to make any meaningful gains this year. And then I should probably just reference as well that Marc Marquez, of course, he made that sensational move from Honda last year. He's now racing for one of the Ducati satellite teams in Gresini Racing MotoGP. He came ever so close to a podium at the first race of the year in Qatar. He finished P4. He finished P16 in Portugal, and he had a retirement at the Circuit of the Americas in Austin at the last race weekend.
Did he not crash out while leading or high up in the running order?
Yeah. He's had his bad luck that he's had the last couple of years seems to continue on, but he's still sitting on 36 points. But again, that's the net benefit of being distributing points all the way down to P15. But obviously not the start that he would have expected, especially since he's got such a great power unit between his legs. But kind of a MotoGP corner update, one that we haven't done in a little while.
I got one question for you before we turn the lights off. Just going back to Casey Stoner's bike here. So 2007 Ducati Desmo Sedici, I think is the way you pronounce it. I'm going to guess at that. Apologies if I butchered it. Anyways, interesting because I'm looking at the livery on the side of the bike, and I'm specifically looking at Casey's overalls, and I see on the side of the fairing, just to below the gas tank, it looks like a barcode. There's a barcode also on his thigh. Is this similar to the Marlboro branding that Ferrari had at a different time or the same time?
Yeah, maybe. And so I'm 99.9% sure it is, but maybe share with the audience what you're referring to.
Yeah. So if you go back and it's a little bit kind of like vague right now, but if you go back and look at the Ferraris from about 20 years ago, from about 2004-5 onwards, they lost that Marlboro branding that was on the side of the car. And what they did is they kept the same color scheme, and everything was identical, but where it used to say Marlboro, they replaced it with like a white barcode. So like wherever you go to the store or whatever, you'll pick up a product, they'll have a barcode. So it was basically inverted. Those are like, a white background with the black stripes on it, the black bars. So this is the other way around on the bike, and then also on the Ferrari itself. But I kind of look at that, and it was kind of funny because you send me this, I guess that this has been out here for about a week or 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And I was looking, I'm like, what a gorgeous motorcycle that is.
And then I know, realize what that is. And you're like, I don't think I'll be picking this one up.
Well, at least it's kind of subtle, but it's funny too. And then I look around the fairing too, just below the windscreen, there's that sort of funny, like, that funny kind of like barcode and a white square, which is also, you know, kind of would have been that little flash, like the Marlboro brand you used to have, like those are like inverted kind of triangle kind of dealies. So I think there's some, you know what, subliminal, did I say subliminal incorrectly there? Anyways, we're almost an hour and a half into this thing. So anyways, I think there's some subliminal marketing going on. Anyhow, that is a very, very cool piece of race history. And Hammy, let's, I think we're good. Let's wrap it up. You know, we're going to get this one out to the people and hopefully they enjoy that conversation.
I did some Googling. So okay. I brought up on Ducati.com, I brought up the actual GP07, which was their 2007 bike, I think, maybe. Hold on, let me double check here, make sure I've got everything. Yep, 2007. So it reads here on Ducati.com, the patriotic barcode. During the season, the GP07 flaunted an unmistakable red livery with a large black and white barcode positioned to the side of the fairing. In the final race of the season at Valencia, which took place over the first weekend in November, the livery was altered to celebrate Ducati having won the Constructors' Championship. In a tribute to Italy, the barcode on the number 27 bike took on the colors of the Italian flag, complete with the words, made in Italy. Stoner may have finished second at Valencia, but he rounded up 2007 with a title for himself and one for Ducati. Okay, so that's not helpful at all because it doesn't actually reveal what the barcode is supposed to. Oh, wait a minute. Now I'm looking. So previous iterations of this bike in the previous years had a very large So yes, I can definitively say that yes, the barcode was in fact a substitute for where it had previously said before it said that word along the side of the fairing.
That's okay. We know you're not a smoker, so you can mispronounce it all that you want. So one thing I'm not going to mispronounce is the Race Weekend magazine, because you know, that they're always such amazing people to work with. Go check them out at theraceweekend.com, RACEWKND.com. Use our promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout, receive 10% off a subscription, and also check out what Tease and the crew have assembled over at RacingExclusives.com. Exactly how it sounds. Pardon me, for unique, one of a kind racing Formula One merch and memorabilia, and appreciate the support, because we have that beautiful half-scale autographed Pierre Gasly helmet to give away to the winner of our Fantasy League, asterisk, if you're within the lower or the continental United States or North America, we can affordably ship that out this year. Anyways, and as we go, as always, if you appreciate what we do here, please head on over to Apple or Spotify, etc. Leave us a nice rating review there and give us a follow on Instagram. And well, we're not really, haven't been doing anything on X in a while. So anyways, that's where we're at. Or send us an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. Hammy, thank you so very much for doing this. And we'll try and get this edited so it's actually still relevant by the time it gets drops into people's feeds a little bit later on. And that's it. Enjoy the weekend off. Back to racing next weekend in Miami. And until then, enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.